Okay, this is going to be the first episode of the Bitcoin Youth Podcast. I'm joined with Chris and James from Bridge to Bitcoin. Great guys, and enjoy.
Guess what he's going to study at uni and which universities?
He's going to study maths at Oxford.
No. Close.
Not quite.
No idea. Go on.
Economics and philosophy. I've got into Southampton and York so far, and I've got LSE, Manchester and Bristol to get back to me.
He's going to the dark side.
That's off your grades that you got last summer.
He's going to hate it. 4 years of learning rubbish. Or not learning rubbish, but 4 years of learning a very narrow piece of economics.
Yeah. Harley, what you need to do is set up a Bitcoin society the moment you arrive.
That's what I was thinking. Yes, I do. Yeah. I need to, I've swore to myself, every essay I write is going to be Bitcoin related.
Okay, that's fine. But seriously, because we've been trying to get various, you know, wherever we get contacts, trying to get people to set up a Bitcoin society, it would be fantastic for your, not just for your CV, but for all the other students there and for you know, anyone who visits, because if you do something like that with our help and with help from other people in the Bitcoin space in the UK and indeed globally, you'll be able to get some great people to visit and give seminars.
Yeah.
There'll be all sorts of sponsorship, I'm sure, that you'll be able to get hold of. I think that it's just for a Bitcoiner going to university, it's just such an obvious thing to do. In terms of benefits for you and for your peer group at the uni,
it's definitely a good idea. Yeah.
So as and when you get there, get back in touch, and you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
We can organise speakers, and you know, and do a sort of freshers' fair thing in for your second year. You know, when maybe, because I think it takes a bit of time. You have to kind of go to the student union and go through an election, set it up, go through it, and you have to fill in all kinds of forms, from my experience, elect, you know, go through and select a president and a secretary and some sort of welfare officers and all the rest of the bullshit that they tell you need to have. Right? Yeah. You do that, and then you can launch it, and then in the sort of freshers' fair of your second year, you can have a stand and start getting people to join, and you can have like lots of freebies there, like, I'd come along, I'm sure Chris would come along on Freshers' Fair and give out Bitcoin and, you know, kind of all this stuff. So, yeah.
Free sats, yeah. That's definitely a good
idea. Yeah, free sats, yeah.
Good selling point.
Really cool. I'll leave that with you. No idea.
And also, I mean, because you don't have, you don't drive yet, Harley, if you set up your own Bitcoin society, it means you don't have to drive anywhere to get to a meetup. Yeah, the meetup will be at uni. At the bar, it'll be cool.
Yeah,
it'll be cool. Yeah, we'll definitely help. We'll definitely
I'd like
help.
That. thank you. Yeah, I'll get on that as soon as I'm there. So do you want to talk about merchant adoption, Bitcoin merchant adoption?
Yeah, how long have you got, Harley? We can talk for hours. Yeah.
I've got as long as you have. do you tend to approach businesses, or do you find that they approach you more often?
So a lot of our work now, so we originally started off approaching businesses. So James was probably the most proactive out of three of us at the start. James actually went knocking on doors in Berkshire, in Reading, didn't you, James? With ex-CoinCorner employee, along with a MSW from Coin Corner, no longer with Coin Corner. He did a day knocking on doors. But nowadays, we tend to get businesses referred to us. Businesses come to us through other Bitcoiners who've broached the subject with a local business owner, and then they want to take things to the next level. And we also exhibit at trade shows. So last October, so it's now December 2024, so in October 2024, we were back at the XL. I think it was maybe the third time we were at the XL, I think, for the Hospitality Tech Trade Show. So we have a little stand there. So the businesses come to us, if you like. So we go and set up a stand next to the likes of, well, close to the likes of Dojo and other payment providers. And business owners come and see our stand and go, oh, what's all this about? And we explain to them what we do. And maybe that's a nice segue as to what we do. So we onboard, we help businesses accept Bitcoin payments, but we don't orange pill them. So a lot of people assume we go around trying to orange pill business owners. So as James was alluding to before we started the recording, what we do with businesses, we look for their pain points, essentially, and all businesses have a common pain point, and that common pain point is revenue. So footfall or eyeballs, and then revenue. And by accepting Bitcoin, our pitch is you open yourself up to an untapped customer base just by adding this additional payment rail to your business. And it's that simple. Now, if you... We occasionally come across business owners. Say again, Harley.
Attract crazy Bitcoiners.
Yeah, attract crazy. Or, as I like to put it, attract really a really loyal customer base. So this customer base, the catchment area is far larger than your catchment area for your normal customers, if you like. And it's really simple to do. So simple, people, business owners are surprised when we do it there and then. Most of the time we help business owners do it over a Zoom call, and that's all it takes, because the solutions that exist, if a business is just accepting Bitcoin and keeping the Bitcoin, i.e. they're not converting it into pounds, then there's no KYC, so there's no documentation to submit. The solutions that exist mean that you can do it within minutes and they're up and running. And what we do, in actual fact, we market businesses out. So if you boil us down to what we are, what we've worked out we are, is we're a marketing consultancy, really. So we signpost businesses or handhold them through the process for them to accept Bitcoin payments, which, as I say, is really simple, can happen over a Zoom call. But the secret sauce is we market that business out to the Bitcoin community once they're up and running and accepting Bitcoin. And that's the key bit that we do. Because we occasionally come across business owners who have started accepting Bitcoin already. So at the trade show, I'll often come across a business owner go, they'll say something like, oh, I accepted Bitcoin since 2020 or whatever the year might be. And I'll go, great, how's it going? And often, often they'll say, oh, I haven't had one customer pay in Bitcoin. And I go, okay, what did you do? And they go, well, I put a sign on the door or in the window or on the website. And I go, oh, great. And then, and they go, and they'll go, and no one wanted to pay in Bitcoin. And if you're into marketing, you know they've made a fatal error. What they haven't done is they haven't marketed themselves to the customer base they're trying to attract. What they, in actual fact, were probably trying to do were trying to change the behavior of their current customers. So once you accept Bitcoin, we market you out to the Bitcoin community, and we do that through a number of ways. So our other co-founder at Bridge to Bitcoin, he set up a separate entity called Bitcoin Events UK, and he is in contact, well, we're all in contact with all the other meetup leaders. So there are lots of Bitcoin meetups throughout the UK, as there are across the world. And we're in contact with them mainly through Telegram and also Twitter, or X as it's called now. And as soon as a Bitcoin accepts Bitcoin payments, we'll then contact that local meetup group, depending on where that business is based, let them know, and effectively point them towards that business. And more often than not, we don't need to say, go to that business. Before we've said go to that business, they'll go, oh, fantastic, we will go to that business. And then we put them on a map, or James normally puts them on a map. So we've got a map on our website on bridge2bitcoin.com, and there's also a global map, btcmap.org, and there's also an online directory as well. And so we add them to the maps and the directory, and we market them out on Twitter, Instagram, Telegram. I can't remember what else we do. I think that's it.
Noster.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry.
Noster.
Yeah.
You do that.
I do that. Yes.
So that's Chris's sort of role. Yeah.
So yeah, we don't orange pill businesses. In actual fact, we're a marketing consultancy. We push this untapped customer base towards normal business owners, and by doing that, they get to see or experience Bitcoin in their own environment, which I think is a far stronger initial orange pill. Because often when Bitcoiners have spoken to pre-coiners about Bitcoin, we can be quite cultish because of the enthusiasm.
Really?
But when we present them with a business proposition, and they see Bitcoin coming into their business, it's just additional revenue. And it's a far more normal proposition, if you like. And that's a nice segue into one of my taglines, which is normalize, don't evangelize Bitcoin. Often Bitcoiners evangelize it and it scares people off. But if we can normalize it, I think that's a far easier way of getting people to look at Bitcoin and then see it for what it is, and eventually they can work out how it fits into their lives, if you like. Anyway, I could ramble on forever. Go and ask some more questions, Harley, or pass the mic over to James.
Yeah, no, I just want to ask you, yeah, specifically James, that what was the approach you would go for when you knock on doors? How would you start that conversation?
So it's back in the early days, and it was just start sort of having a conversation. I think we had a leaflet, a very basic leaflet, which was part of an open source project on Figma, and we just sort of took what had been produced in other countries and created a UK line and just edited it a bit for our own sort of place. And then I'd just go in there and talk about Coin Corner, because Coin Corner at the time had just launched their Bolt card and their payment solution. So we didn't really know what we were doing. So you just try and then you learn. And I mean, it was an example where a local pub to me, the manager of the pub, actually, as it happened, was quite pro Bitcoin. So he spoke to the boss who owned two pubs, his boss, and said, well, you know, can you come talk to this guy? And I knew that manager because I play in a local squash club and we have our dinners there when we play in the local Berkshire League. So I knew the manager personally. And so he probably did me a bit of a favour. He got his boss in and met him for a coffee in the pub one morning and ran through it all. And he's like, I'm not really interested in Bitcoin. He said, you know, it's volatile, whatever. I'm not that bothered. And then sort of, we were almost closing out. It's going, okay, thank you for your time, you know. I said, but you don't have to keep the Bitcoin, because, of course, Coin Corner had the, you know, had that innovation where you could receive pounds, even though the payment's made over the Bitcoin Lightning Network. I'm like, okay, so you mean I can accept Bitcoin but not actually have to have any Bitcoin? Yeah. So, okay, so then basically what's the downside? I said, well, there isn't one really. You just might get some extra custom. And he's like, okay, well, let's do it. So that's its experiences of going out and knocking on doors and having those conversations that gets you to, you evolve how you go about it. And you start to realise where the sort of sweet spot of the proposition lies. And so, as Chris, I think Chris said, we didn't know that we would be a marketing company. It kind of happened to us. Yeah. But those things happen. You only happen because you get out there and you do it. I mean, so today it's all about, would you like some extra business? You know, that's the pitch. Do you want some extra revenue, as Chris was saying? And but equally, I don't really go knocking on doors anymore, because we've got enough going on to keep us busy without actually doing that cold calling. But you know, if you don't start with the cold calling, you won't get anywhere. It's the same in any business. You've sort of, to get off the ground from zero, almost all startups have to basically get on the phone, tread the, you know, yeah. p- put the shoes on, tread the pavements, knock on doors, meet people, go to exhibitions maybe as well. You've got to put yourself out there and be open to the idea that your business might not be what you thought it was. I think that's I think that's a lesson for anyone starting a business, is don't box yourself in at the start. You know, listen to the feedback you get and adjust accordingly. Mm, would be what course, I say. Yeah. So I'm not sure that's a great answer to your question, but
it is.
I think the real answer is we don't knock on doors so much now.
Yeah. It's just not off-putting the way that you approach people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not going in to talk about Bitcoin particularly. I'm not trying to turn them into Bitcoiners. We're just trying to give them some extra business.
And
as Chris said, leave that journey for them to go down at their own time. So
So for both of you, as you were saying just previously,
I was going to say there is a group of people that you do talk to specifically about Bitcoin, James. So James is also an accountant, and James has done talks at SEMA, haven't you? And I went along to a talk, and James spoke to at SEMA in London about what Bitcoin is, to essentially let this group of accountants know. And
the Institute of Management Accountants.
How did that go?
So I quite liked the slightly different take that you presented Bitcoin at that. Maybe I don't know if you want to talk about that, James, or Harley, you want to hear James, but I quite like that take.
So it's kind of so building upon Bridge to Bitcoin, I mean, each of the three of us have gone off and done other things as well, and beyond Bridge to Bitcoin, which we're still doing. But Bridge to Bitcoin is a particular sort of solution for typically small businesses in the UK. And that's not to say medium-sized and large businesses can't do that, but we're not at that stage of the development of the market yet. But my professional background before I came into Bitcoin was, I'm an accountant and I worked in financial services for 20 years. And gradually through being engaged in doing things in Bitcoin, like Bridge to Bitcoin, like Laser Eyes Cards, which we're directors of as well, which is in that business, and a couple of other things. We set up a charity which holds its treasury in Bitcoin. So we're talking to treasuries and not-for-profits as well. I started to be able to synthesize my sort of history in sort of corporate world with my learning of Bitcoin, and the way that I talk about Bitcoin in a corporate setting is more about a technology, a protocol. So rather than talking about a specific tactic that a business could use to take advantage of it, for instance, accept Bitcoin to generate additional revenue, we're stepping back a little bit further and saying, well, for corporates, this is more about understanding that here's a new technology, a new protocol, essentially, a new internet protocol. Some people call it money over internet protocol. And that the implications of that for much more wide-ranging in a business than just simply, should I accept that as a money or not? There are all sorts, when you start to think through the way that this could change the world, it could change markets, it could change products, it could change channels, it could change the way that a business operates, or because businesses always have to have an eye on the horizon from a strategic planning point of view at the C-suite level. You know, businesses do not carry on. They're not the same this year as they were last year, and they won't be the same next year or in 5 years' time. And there are a number of reasons for that. But one of the big reasons for that is technology innovation. And this technology, which we all think is going to dramatically increase in terms of its permeation of the world, the financial system and business in general, if that happens, large corporations need to have this on their risk register so that they're ready. They've got some plans. They've thought about their products and markets. They've thought about where those where those things may be, there are threats to their existing business, but also opportunities that they could take advantage of. So it's a much different presentation. I'm not saying, well, you should accept Bitcoin, or you should put Bitcoin on your balance sheet, or you should do this, or you should do that. It's more like, no, you should just be aware of this technology. You should probably get one or two people in finance and risk to learn about it. So yeah. Send them on a training. We will happily like train them. You know, we're also teacher qualified. Myself, Chris, and Simon. We're all qualified with Mi Primer Bitcoin as teachers of their course as well, the course from El Salvador. I think, as I mentioned before, I'm also one of a few writers of a corporate version of that course for Mi Primer Bitcoin, which will be coming out in due course. Oh, wow. Again, it'll be published open source to help organisations learn about this technology in their own industry or in their own internal function, and to think about it from a kind of different level, a more strategic level. And they need to look at those threats, think about the opportunities, and maybe they assess that this is not something that's going to happen in the next 5 years, and maybe they think for their business it will be low impact, in which case, fine. But they've done the exercise, they've got it on their risk register, and maybe they revisit it in a few years. I'm not even going to tell them this is going to happen next year and you've got to do something. Mm. It's more about making them think about this as a new technology and how it may affect their business, and just do the exercise that they would always do or ought always to do as custodians of shareholder assets to de-risk changes in the world, particularly in the technology world. So it's not about telling them what they need to do, or even telling them that this is going to happen. It's more like, I think you should go and look at this, right? And I think you should then own it. It's your business, not mine. Mm. You should then own that. Yeah. And in so doing, what you're really doing is you're starting them on the journey. Because I believe that anyone that looks at this and spends, as we all know, a few hours learning about it and then starts to think about the implications, the what ifs for their business, is going to come. I mean, maybe a small percentage of people just won't be able to overcome their prejudice, but almost everybody in a professional capacity, once they're allowed to think about it clearly and rationally, will come to some form of conclusion that this needs to stay on the risk register at the very least. We need to revisit it every year at the very least. I think a large number of people will go, actually, yeah, this marketplace here, this could be a problem for us. What can we do to shore that up? How can we pivot slightly so that we de-risk that market or that channel for our products? Or what about the opportunities? What's this thing about the demographics of Bitcoiners? How many of them are there? Where are they? What's their sort of culture? How do they interact? What do they value apart from Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin is just the money. What are the things that they want, that they are likely to want to use that money for? How are they? How old are they? You know, where are they? Are they getting richer or poorer? Well, if this succeeds, they're probably getting richer. So maybe if I'm a luxury goods manufacturer or I run five-star resorts around the world, maybe I might be interested in engaging with that community today. Even if they're not at that level today, if this succeeds, then they probably will be. So maybe there's a risk in my business that I might suffer in one area, but here's a way, if this succeeds, where I can actually exploit the opportunity proactively, accepting Bitcoin, for instance. But it's not, when we're talking at this level, it's not about telling them what to do. It's about guiding them where to look and maybe how, and then supporting them possibly with how to think about it, giving them some kind of facilitation, consultancy and facilitation in that process. So yeah, like that's the other way of looking at it.
Yeah, that sounds really good. What's like the most common refute against looking into Bitcoin that you really find? Is it the volatility, like you mentioned before, or do you find other there are other aspects that people are quite skeptical of.
I'm not too sure where to start with that.
Volatility was one. So volatility was one, but in conversations, again, this evolution of our conversations with businesses about accepting it, as I said, that initial conversation way back when, there was no way I hadn't thought it through enough at the time to give any other answer than, or you can convert it to pounds. But today we don't meet that resistance so much. Today, they might raise the volatility point. We'll go, yeah, but this extra business that you're going to get by accepting Bitcoin, it's not going to be a large percentage of your business. Let's say you generate an extra 1% in revenue because you take Bitcoin. Does it matter if that goes up or down 50%? I mean, is that material to your business? If you're running really, really tight cash flows, then maybe it is, and that's a fair point. But most businesses turn around and go, yeah, actually, yeah, I'll see how it goes, and if it's a problem, I'll I can always switch it to pounds anyway. I'll just send it to an exchange and I'll convert it. And we're like, yeah, you don't have to do it at the point of sale. Yeah. And there's sometimes a bit of a question about accounting. And I mean, I'm an accountant, so I can talk to them or I can talk to their accountants about it if there's any issues there. Because obviously because the price moves, it does have some impacts on the balance sheet. But again, if it's a small amount of revenue for the business, it's not that material. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing is that gradually over time, the perspective that we start to talk to individuals about Bitcoin now is moved on from where it was 2 years ago, and the general level of resistance and suspicion that it's a sort of Ponzi scheme or whatever the ideas are seems to have fallen. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the sentiment is definitely changed, and there's less resistance now in terms of sort of friction against businesses accepting Bitcoin. I mean, I think we're still, I know this is a phrase that you hear in the space a lot, but we're still really early. So when we're looking at business owners looking to accept Bitcoin, we're essentially looking for innovators. So not even early adopters, I think. I still think we're in the innovator stage. So we're looking for business owners who are innovators. And if you're a business owner who is not an innovator, you're probably just going to feel uncomfortable about doing this because we're still in that innovator stage. So you might not be a laggard, you might just be a normal adopter, but it just might just feel a bit too soon because it's too new a tech. So we're really looking for those who've got that innovator mindset, who want to try something different. But in terms of when business owners refute Bitcoin, I bring it back to the phrase I often say is, well, you can see Bitcoin in its most basic form as money. It was designed as a peer-to-peer digital cash. So if we look at it as money, with my Bridge to Bitcoin hat on, what we will do for you is we will drive this untapped customer base to the business for you for free. So we're driving money to your business. And you don't have to keep this money as Bitcoin. You can convert it straight away into pounds. So because we're recording in the UK, I'll give pound sterling as the example. So in this country, we measure with pounds. We don't, our unit of measure, if you like, is not Bitcoin. We measure everything in pounds. So when you ask for a bill at the end of your meal, it comes out in pounds, regardless of however you're going to pay it, whether you're an American, whether you're a European with a European debit card, or an American with an American credit card, the bill always comes in pounds. It's the same with Bitcoiners. So they'll be presented with a bill in pounds. The Bitcoiner could pay in Bitcoin, but the payment rail or the payment provider would switch that into would switch it from Bitcoin into pounds if the business owner wanted it to do that, much like it would convert the American's credit card from US dollars into pounds for them. So the business owner doesn't need to worry about the Bitcoin if the business owner is not interested in the Bitcoin. So from my perspective, what I try and impress upon them is that it's virtually zero risk. We're literally just, the proposition literally is, there's this untapped customer base. if you put this system in place, you will attract this customer base. But because we're in that innovator stage, if someone's uncomfortable with that, then I say, okay, that's fine. You don't have to do it. There's a sea of business owners out there who will do it. I don't push too hard, if you like, because some people just aren't ready for it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that puts people off as well. When you try and push too hard, it probably delays them from really getting into it.
And it's a waste of our time. Yeah. It's a waste of our time as well. Time we could have been spending with innovators instead.
I don't want to be doing that. Okay. Do we want to talk a little bit about meetups as well? Because I think they're really important and probably undervalued slightly by some people, and quite intimidating, to be honest, for people my age. At least personally, I found a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, so I can't remember. I think I said, I'll just briefly go over it then and hopefully pick up the second half. So from my perspective, I think meetups are important for two reasons. And there's probably a lot more reasons, but two primary reasons from my perspective are it's good for merchant adoption because it gives us hard numbers to take to local business owners, because we can say there are X number of Bitcoiners for definite in this area, or likelihood there are probably more because not everyone goes to a meetup. But also it's good for the soul because when you first discover Bitcoin, you probably discover it online, and all your friends and family are probably berating you, saying you've lost the plot, and what are you doing with this Ponzi scam thing? And that can be quite wearing, to say the least, if everyone around you is calling you a fool for investing in this cryptocurrency, which we know it's not. Bitcoin sits on its own. So it's good for the soul to finally be able to meet up with Bitcoiners in real life. And I often see the weight lift off Bitcoin's shoulders when they finally get to talk about Bitcoin with fellow Bitcoiners. Certainly from my perspective, I felt that weight. And I see it regularly when new people go to meetups, my meetup as well as others. I think it's really important. And to reiterate, if it wasn't caught in the recording earlier, there are lots of meetups throughout the country. I think we've got over 60 meetups or thereabouts. If you check out Bitcoin Events UK, it's a separate entity run by Simon, our fellow co-founder at Bridge to Bitcoin, and he lists all the meetup. He also does a weekly newsletter, so check out the website and subscribe to the weekly newsletter to keep abreast of when each meetup's popping up. But on that website, on Bitcoin Events UK, is also a map, so you can go and check out where your local meetup is. And I'll add to that that every meetup is slightly different. So some are more techie, some are more interested. Like mine, I like to get speakers in. Others are more about getting together for a social and just discussing as a group or one-on-one. So they've all got slightly different flavours, if you like. So, but pop along to your local meetup. I think you said earlier it can be quite daunting, Harley, to go to a meetup, especially if you're new to it. Just bear in mind some of them. They're all a little different. So if you're not a technical person and you find yourself at a meetup that's very technical, just bear in mind that they're not all like that. They're all slightly different. And I'm sure there's a meetup, hopefully close to you, that suits your how you see Bitcoin and how Bitcoin sits with you. Go check one out. If you don't have a meetup that's local to you, start one up. Get in contact. Simon will assist you with that. It's really simple. Essentially, just choose location and a regular time and place, and the Bitcoiners will come. Build it and they will come, as we say.
Yes. Yes. I'd love to get one started in Hertfordshire. Fill the gap.
Yeah. Yeah, after your travels, there is definitely a gap in that map there. All those Bitcoiners who are listening, who are in that pocket just northwest of London, pull your finger out, guys. We keep coming across them, James, don't we? These Bitcoiners in that area who are, for whatever reason, just are waiting for someone to start a meetup but haven't started one up themselves.
So there are people.
But yeah, there's definitely a gap there.
There are Bitcoiners.
There are Bitcoiners, yes.
Oh, that's exciting. That is really exciting. Yeah, okay. Also, I wanted to ask you, for new people, and especially young people, maybe just getting into Bitcoin, what were the resources that you found most helpful for educating yourself?
So I'm class of 2017. So a lot of the resources that exist now don't exist then. So I'm probably not the best person to ask what are good resources for someone who's new coming into the space. I mean, James has curated a great sort of learning list, if you like, of Bitcoin material. Yeah. So yeah, James is probably a good person to run through with that. Maybe a shout out for Jordan Walker. He has set up something called Genesis, the Genesis Collective. I'll see if I can find the website. So I think he does weekly lessons. So if you subscribe to Genesis, it's sort of an online course where he gets guest speakers and they talk about elements of Bitcoin. I'll have a look for the website. But James, you've curated a great list, so I'm going to hand the mic over to you in terms of learnings, because you came to Bitcoin when there was probably quite a bit more resources available.
It was in 2020 when I came to it, and actually I came to it whilst doing a research master's degree, so kind of reading stuff and learning was obviously part of how you do research. So although a lot of the stuff that I subsequently accessed was not relevant for the degree, the trajectory upon which I set out was very much a learning trajectory rather than here's an investment, I let me find out about it. So the things that I typically send, and it depends whether this is based on individuals, the things that I typically send to individuals involve, there's a short video, a sort of 5-10 minute video called What is Bitcoin on YouTube. That's really a very, very good place to start.
Is that there's the one on your website,
course, right? Have we got a link to it on our website, have we?
I think so. There's a link on there and I clicked it and it took me to a video of what is Bitcoin. So I don't know if Simon's
okay, well, yeah, so then it's kind of like cartoon video, yeah. Is that right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, right. Simon must have put that up at some point then, yeah. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't
carry on. Yeah. No, it's fine. Then there's the Sailor Academy, of course. So the 12-hour course, Bitcoin for Everybody, that is absolutely brilliant. And again, that certainly didn't exist in 2017. It may not have even existed when I started in 2020. It may have come out sort of early 21, something like that. But that's something I highly recommend. Then a whole sort of panoply of different podcasts and training videos. So things like the What Is Money podcasts with Robert Breedlove, BTC Sessions, all of his stuff. That's really, really good for the technicals. I mean, he does other stuff as well, but I think it's great as a place to go for what's this wallet like? How does that hardware wallet work? What should I do? How do I run a node? What about running a Lightning node? All of the things, Nostr, everything that's kind of in the space and you want a video on something where it will talk you through doing it. That's really, really good. And then various articles. So, for instance, the article written by KPMG US last summer about energy, which is a fantastic, effectively, rebuttal of all of the energy fear, uncertainty and doubt, or energy FUD, that gets put out, basically saying that if we want to make the world greener and improve the social and governance metrics as well across the world, then actually Bitcoin might be required. Never mind it being neutral or a bad thing. It might actually be necessary that we fix the money so that we can save the planet and improve the social and governance metrics for people across the world as well. So those are a few of the things. I mean, I've just got a new book on my desk, at least I thought I did, which I think fits brilliantly Where did I put it? Oh, it's the latest book by Danny Scott and Henry Holligan. I've definitely got a copy right here. I don't know. Let me just grab it. I know where it is.
That's why
I think this is going to be a new one, because a new one on the list. So Bitcoin Explained I'm Five.
I saw that on Reddit the other day.
This is a really good book, because it's just the right for someone who's just starting. I think it's very easy to get. It's not too heavy. So for your first book, I mean, obviously you can see on the bookshelf back there, whole host of different books. The Bitcoin Standard, obviously. Resistance Money, I think, is fantastic. Broken Money, Lynn Alden. And then obviously you've got to get to Mises, Ludwig von Mises, and Theory of Money and Credit, or what's the other one there? Human Action. Yeah, so there's all these... There's so many books now, and again back in 2017 but those are sort of, most of those you maybe want one or two books, but then you want the other stuff, the videos, the podcasts and stuff that sort of really make it easier to just get in to start with before you start reading the books, I think.
Of course.
I don't know, what do you think, Chris?
I agree. And just to pick up what I mentioned earlier, Genesis Collective. So the website is genesiscollective.co, and it's bite-sized, expert-led masterclasses on Bitcoin, making it easy and fun for those curious to learn Bitcoin, perfect for beginners. And that's £7.99 per month. But Jordan offers a 30-day free trial at the beginning. So check that out, see if that suits you, if you're new to Bitcoin and you like the look of that. You get that 30-day free trial at the beginning. I've heard others give it good reviews, so that could be a good way of learning about Bitcoin if you're new to it, because you've got a little bit from lots of different experts. I think Jordan's doing great work there, so check that out. But yeah, agree with James, there are loads of books out there. I mean, there's a hell of a plethora, but check out those ones that James mentioned as well. We're overrun with information,
You haven't told us about your journey, actually, Harley. Maybe do that in a moment, just a matter of interest. But you say you're planning to study economics and philosophy at university. There'll be two books, so I'd say read, if you haven't read Mises, The Theory of Money and Credit, that's the economics bit.
Yeah.
And then the second bit would be this book that came out this year called Resistance Money.
I'm on it. I'm on chapter...
Were you at Cheat Code?
Yeah, I was at Cheat Code. I saw them speak. I love them, yeah.
Yeah.
If I could go to any university across the world, Wyoming, I really want to go to... Because that's... he's got his Bitcoin course or something, doesn't he, there? In Wyoming, which
He's trying to make it a center of sort of Bitcoin academia at the moment, at the University of Wyoming. Yeah,
and he's
yeah.
done well as well, because Wyoming introduced talking about, I don't know, Wyoming something. There's something in Wyoming about the preserve of Bitcoin. So,
Senator Lummis. Yeah, Senator Lummis is the senator from Wyoming, isn't she? So she's you're right. I think the state has done some stuff as well. Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely done a good job. I did see them speak. I love them. Yeah, I'm nearly done.
So what was your journey? You're quite young to have got into it. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was 14 when I first heard about it, which was... I heard about crypto. It was the guy I was in school with. It sounds weird because I was 14, but he liked bragging about the fact that he was selling drugs in exchange for Bitcoin. So that's how I heard about it. And then I did what was it called? There was Whiteboard Crypto, I think it's called, had their course on something, and I did some research on there. And then my dad does some software stuff and kind of understands it to a decent degree, so he was quite up for it. And then I made him buy some, just a little bit, and then I kind of forgot about it for the next 3 years. I'd listen to the odd What Bitcoin Did podcast, because obviously Peter is great and I love that. And then I did economics A-level, which I was really excited for, because I was like, I'm going to be able to properly understand Bitcoin once, you know, with the help of economic sale level. And I was wrong. I was completely wrong. It didn't help at all. And then as soon as I left school, I just, all I've done is read books on Bitcoin and economics and philosophy. I was showing Chris earlier, there's my little pile of books.
Wow.
Hidden Cost of Money, Price of Tomorrow, some Menger books.
My God, you're going to be a nightmare for your economics tutors.
This is what I was saying to Harley earlier. It's going to be 4 years of Harley arguing with his lecturers and professors.
I can't wait.
You're either going to get a first, or you're going to get chucked off the course, Harley.
Yeah, they won't let me. This guy's too annoying. Get him out.
Reach out if they threaten that. Reach out to Bradley Rettler. I'm sure they'll switch your course over to Wyoming. Yeah.
Yes, please. I like that. No, it's been really fun. It's been really eye opening because obviously I only know of Bitcoin because the get rich quick. I mean, there's some Bitcoin, there's crypto, and it's got me interested, and then actually learnt, and it's been really, really, really good. Like, Cheat Code was amazing, all of that. Listening to podcasts.
So when did you reject crypto? When did you make that journey from?
I don't think I ever actively did. I think I just, right, that gap between not really researching it or looking into it and becoming interested in it again just was completely Bitcoin focused. And then,
right,
obviously since then I've been like, you always have the phase of like, why is it Bitcoin? And then you go down the rabbit hole and you realize that everything else is nowhere near as good. But yeah, it was kind of luck.
Yeah. I guess the learning materials are probably, I mean, not that I've researched learning materials in any other crypto, but I imagine that they surely can't be as broad and deep as they are in Bitcoin because,
I don't think so. I don't think any of them really have the same.
Well, I wouldn't.
Similar, to be honest.
Not that I've researched crypto recently, but I imagine crypto doesn't so much as have learning material, more just marketing material. So that's probably the difference. But I want to know more about Cheat Code in terms of so that's the first time you came across us and Bridge to Bitcoin.
Yes.
And you said you really enjoyed it. What did you like about Cheat Code? What was so good? So was that your first conference and your first time meeting Bitcoiners in real life?
Yeah, exactly. So it was like you said, it's like I can actually, there's someone else, you know, and it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders because there is someone else that actually likes it properly and is into it, which is, crazy to me at the time.
That was quite jumping in at the deep end. That was the first time you met Bitcoiners and there were 500 of them, some of them quite high profile ones as well.
I know. It was incredible how many people that Peter got to come to the UK of all places, and Bedford, not even London, Bedford.
And he's doing the same again next year. Ridiculous. So I was chatting to him about that weekend or the weekend before, so he's hoping to double it in size, and should be bigger, hopefully better. So will we see you there again?
It's gonna be crazy. It's April, isn't it? I think I'm in Cambodia in April, so probably not. But I would definitely be listening to all the speeches because he puts them all on his podcast after, doesn't he? I really wanted to go, but I'm not going to be there, unfortunately. If it was in February, I'd be there.
You'll be orange pilling the locals in Cambodia instead. Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe doing a bit of a Joe Nakamoto.
Yeah, I'm in Vietnam when they have a celebration of communism, so that's going to be really interesting. when I'm there. I'm a little bit scared for that, but it's fine. No speaking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, just just keep yourself to yourself, you know, don't...
Stay inside.
Dance in the street, you know, have some fun, but don't get too serious.
Oh, yeah, that would be funny. It would be funny. But we good. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm most excited for Costa Rica, to be honest, because that's quite a hub for Nostra and as well.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting. I think it was what Max DeMarco did a thingy, and he interviewed some people in Costa Rica, I think.
Harley, I'm interested in the space that you occupy at the moment in terms of your demographics. So are you the only Bitcoiner amongst your friends? Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Interesting. And what is it? No. How can I put this? How do you try and broach Bitcoin with them, with your friends? And what's the sort of sentiment when you speak to them about Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like they're all really smart. Like they are smart people. So I try and go in it from the economics point of view. And like before we started recording, I talked to my friend from Cambridge yesterday. And I find it so hard. Like I went at it from the angle of, why do you think unless you somehow become uber rich, will never be able to afford a house or genuinely own a house? And he goes, I don't know. It's just how it is and how it always will be. And then I said, okay. And then I look at maybe a debt-based system compared to a hard money standard, to the, as well as I can. Obviously, I'm not the most well-versed person to talk about it, but I try. And then he hit me with, but I just think a debt-based system has much better alignment of incentives than hard money. I don't know where to go from there. I was like, no. And then, I kind of gave up. But I'll keep trying.
So I'll give you a comeback on that. Okay.
Yes, please.
Who is privileged to be able to access debt best?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who gets the debt? Who's in the best position in a debt-based society? Is it the rich or the poor?
Mm-hmm.
Debt-based system, yeah, because they can get debt easily at good prices, right? Whereas the poor, many of them can't get it at all, and if they can, it's at ridiculous prices.
Ridiculous interest, yeah.
So the poor don't get to use debt as a way to get richer. They, if they can get it at all, as a way to get poorer but just survive for another week or a month,
yeah,
right? And end up slaves.
Yeah.
So for the rich, it's a massive advantage. For the poor, it's a massive disadvantage. That's why a debt-based system isn't better. I mean, it's a simple, it's not the only reason, but it's a very simple sociological reason of why it's bad. And that's the kind of thing that anyone would get as well. Everyone would understand that.
Mm-hmm. I also went at the angle of quality of food and architecture, because I listened to that Saifedean podcast the other day, and he was talking about the quality of architecture, and I'm quite into my food and stuff as well, so I've read a bit about that. And I tried to explain to him, I asked him why he thinks, you know, architecture and food have declined in quality so far, low time preference, choosing, you know, the less valuable for high time preference reasons, because the money's decreasing in value. He didn't really get that. He just kind of looks at me like I'm crazy. But yeah. We'll get there. We've got a bet, actually.
That's difficult. There's a great book that would help put a background in that, which is Bitcoin is Venice. I don't know if you've come across it, Alan Farrington.
Yeah.
That really, it's quite heavy, but you'll be fine given what you've been reading and, you know, your level of awareness and clear intelligence. But it's really, really worth reading, because you start to understand what capital is and how capital formation works. And one of the reasons why we build crap now, to some degree, I know I'm not 100% bought into that everything's total shit, but I do think it's getting shitter. And one of the reasons is that we're mining the capital, we're consuming the capital. And as you consume the capital, you simply can't afford to build the things with a longer time, you know, with on a longer time frame, so with a lower time preference. Really good book, though. Bitcoin is Venice, Alan Farrington. Highly recommend that.
100%. Yeah, it's on my list. I've got a very long list in my notes app. Okay, so that will get there eventually. There's so many now. So many Bitcoin books. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, I've got a bet with him, which I made when Bitcoin was 52K in pounds, not dollars. And that I said, in 50 years, half the world will be interacting with Bitcoin as a payment system. As in, like, half the population, so 4 billion people. In 50 years, if I'm right, I owe him £52,000. If he's right, If he's right, I owe him £52,000. If I'm right, he owes me a Bitcoin. So I've absolutely scammed him off that deal, because it's... and he agreed to it. We shook on it. So my reminder...
He's going to find a way out of that, guarantee.
The guy from Cambridge that I was trying to talk to yesterday about Bitcoin...
Does he have a Bitcoin?
Like, is he a student? Is your age? Is he student?
My age. Yeah.
He's going to disappear. You're not going to see him again.
Yesterday, when I told him that we passed six figures in dollars, he then did start making deals on if he couldn't pay it back.
Yeah, perhaps he better buy it now, just in case. Yeah, get to buy it now, then
that's
he's got his insurance.
Get it now, because then you're not screwed. Yeah, it'll be funny. I don't think I'll be able to hold him to it. I have to sell his soul for a Bitcoin in 50 years.
No, yeah,
if he doesn't take his house.
Yeah, if he doesn't have a Bitcoin now, in 50 years he's screwed. He's absolutely screwed.
Yeah, he's gonna take his house and his wife, probably. He'll probably get his wife as well as his house.
Oh, wow, he's already negotiating that. I take it he's not yet married.
No, he's not.
He's not yet married. This could be an interesting speech at the wedding, Harley. That
he can, speech with his wife, so I've been married for 30 years. I did make this bet when I was 17, and we're going to have to get a divorce. That's going to be a fun conversation for him.
Maybe he'll say he'll call you aside in a few years and go, I'm getting married. You know that bet? If I make you my best man, you know, can we renegotiate?
No.
And then you'll be able to put that into the speech.
Yeah.
And include the bit about the wife as well.
Start packing now.
Yeah. That's really funny.
I can't believe he agreed to it. Yeah. I mean, they all like.
Have you had any beers?
Oh, yeah.
You had some beers. Were there witnesses?
Pardon?
Were there any witnesses? Witnesses to the deal?
Two other friends were there. They saw.
That's brilliant.
They know the deal.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, surely that should be motivation for him to start stacking, if anything.
He should start getting on that. He hasn't got long.
No. he probably hasn't got that much cash, though, has he? I mean, at that age, you're a student, you don't have any money anyway.
There's not much there to go around.
By the time he's got to any situation where he might only cap, where is he in the first year? Cambridge or first year?
Yeah.
Is he doing a 3 or 4 year course?
Three, unless he does a master's or whatever you do after the three.
Okay. Yeah, he's not going to be any position to put any money into Bitcoin, probably, unless he gets an inheritance of some sort until this point in the next cycle, probably.
Yeah, he's in the mud. I think I win that bet. I might lose. Half the population operating on... I mean, it's a win-win for me either, because if I lose the bet, £52,000 is nothing. In 50 years, it's going to be pennies. Too much printing.
Yeah, I can't believe he's done that. That's incredible.
He's not going to have the same value. I mean, he's going to lose out to inflation, or he's going to lose out to the bet.
Yeah. Trying to think, you could start a sort of crowdfunding thing for him. get the Bitcoin community in the UK to start stumping up into a kind of into a sort of multi-sig wallet, so it's kind of it's escrowed and everything. Mm-hmm. But so people are chipping in to save him, save his wife.
Get set up on Geyser
Fund.
That's
a nice conversation for me.
Yeah. I want to save my future house, wife and children, but because I've promised a friend of mine I'll give him a Bitcoin.
Probably a silly bet 50 years ago. Years.
Wait, what's the timeline? What's the timeline? Is it 50 or how many years?
50 years.
50 years.
Bridge to Bitcoin to get half the population of the world.
So you'd be seven. So you'd both be 70.
Yeah.
Late 60s, 70, yeah.
It's a long time away. I'm not going to forget. We stay on the back of my mind. Yeah, that'd be funny. Let's take more bets like that. Free money for me.
Yeah. So, talking about stacking, Harley, so are you stacking at the moment? So you're about to go travelling.
I'm stacking,
What's the plan whilst you're travelling and whilst you're at university? So you'll be in the same scenario as your friend in terms of presumably you'll be studying full time. You might have a small part-time job. So what's the plan with stacking whilst you're at university and also travelling?
I've got a little bit of cash that I have got in my bank still, which I'm going to use for travelling. I don't want to get rid of any of my stack that's staying. If I have to use it to pay off student loans, I will. Hopefully, wishful thinking, in 4 years, they might accept Bitcoin and I won't have to sell. I can just pay it and that. But we'll see. Yeah, if I have to.
My advice would be don't pay off a debt. I wouldn't pay off any fiat debt with Bitcoin, particularly not a contingent debt. So student loan isn't even as bad as regular debt. It's contingent debt, so I honestly wouldn't do that. Quite apart from the tax implications as well, potentially. I'd keep the Bitcoin and just pay it out of your wages as you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that would be my advice. I mean, not that I'm qualified to give you financial advice. But I mean, student debt is the softest debt you'll ever find.
I mean, having the debt itself is a good opportunity to stack with the. Essentially, no interest.
Yes.
I'll give you my 0% interest loan, and I'll buy Bitcoin.
Hence the question, Harley. So, is that the plan? You're going to take out a whole load of student debt in exchange for Bitcoin?
Yeah, and I'm going to buy Bitcoin with it, and then maybe one day I'll pay it off if I want to. Yeah, that's my idea. That's my good luck.
Interesting.
4 years. That's our entire cycle. That I'm at university, 3-4 years. I can't really go wrong.
I think you could, but you could, as I was saying before, if you set up a Bitcoin society, and you plan, you've made some connections in the space already, and you continue to nurture that over the next, when you go next September, you probably can't really effectively start it till probably, I don't know, let's say your second or third term there. So it'll probably be getting on for 2 years down the line from here. But if you build that idea and that plan and you nurture your network in Bitcoin, I think that you could start to engage in the Bitcoin world potentially with some form of holiday work, that kind of thing, maybe in Bitcoin, during your studies, and that would help you stack while you were a student.
Yeah, I'd definitely hope to carry on the podcast at uni. I mean, once a week isn't really too much of a nice commitment, but it's 2 hours max a week recording, maybe an hour of work editing. It's not too bad, and I enjoy talking to Bitcoiners, so it wouldn't really be work, and it'd be educational. I mean, learning about economics and philosophy does pretty well.
What are the unis you mentioned again, your list of unis?
Yeah, LSE, Manchester, Bristol, York, Southampton.
Okay.
And I've got
offers from York and Southampton. He's got the other three to come back so far.
And you've got your results already, haven't you? So, so it's sort of, I could, when you accept, that's a done deal, then, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So those two are both great as well. So I don't. I'm quite happy already. I don't need the other three to come back. I'll be happy to go to one of those two. We'll see.
Why? So, do you have any plans for after uni, Harley? What's the dream job after uni?
Bitcoin Corporation. I don't know. Yeah. I'm really not sure. We'll see. I've got 3 years at uni to decide, but I'm just gonna carry on studying what I enjoy.
If you like the philosophy, I would say go and do a master's with Bradley Rettler at Wyoming.
Yes,
that would be right. Get yourself into America, then the world's your oyster. I would say that would be. Other things could happen, but that would be, given where you are, you don't particularly know what job you want to do, and it's economics and philosophy. Going and joining those philosophers in America, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. I know, imagine. Yeah, they're really cool guys. Did you get to talk to them when you were at Cheat Code? Did you meet them properly?
Not at Cheat Code. I did meet them at Amsterdam a couple of months ago. And I've subsequently had a call, actually, with Bradley. A one-on-one call because I'm working with a professor at another University of Massachusetts on a conference in Poland in February, and I've been part of introducing her to Bitcoin, and I wanted to introduce her to Bradley so that she's linked in with the Bitcoin academic network in the US. So I had an introductory call with the two of them as well.
That's really good.
I mean, are you on LinkedIn?
No, I do need to get onto that. I definitely will soon. I am, okay. But not properly. I need to set my account up, properly. I'm on it.
Well, look me up when you are, and I could introduce you to Bradley.
Really? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm LinkedIn with him, yeah, I'll introduce you. Say,
yeah, no, he's really cool.
Economics and philosophy undergrad, wants to be in Bitcoin, doesn't know what his future holds. I'll do that. Yeah, so when you set up, just let me know. It's James Dewar. You know my name, you got it on the email.
Yeah. And in answer to your question, Harley, I didn't really speak to the other speakers at Cheat Code. It was a working day for us, really, James, wasn't it? In terms of we onboarded
all the local
businesses that morning before. Well, not all of the local businesses, but the food carts outside.
Oh my God, yeah.
We only set them up that morning just because of the way it worked out with them and Peter, and also the venue itself. So we had just put the point of sale solutions in place that morning. So I was essentially just going around making sure they were happy and it was all working okay. I think there were only a couple of issues, which were user error, is what we boiled it down to. A couple of people. It looked like it was a couple of bits.
Wi-Fi disconnection as well, wasn't there on one?
Was there Wi-Fi? Okay. And I think there was that classic case of someone trying to connect to their own node. And paying, standing there for 10 minutes going, hold on, I'll call the wife up to get her to switch it off and on again. I was in sort of working mode as opposed to socializing mode. But yeah, it's a shame you didn't make the football the day after, Harley. That was a good laugh. Yeah. Hopefully, if you can't make 2025, then hopefully 2026.
Yeah, I was talking, when you were trying to rejoin, I was talking to James about the, Berkshire game, is that it?
Beaconsfield game, yeah, and I found the date of that. It's 22nd of March is the home game at Berkhamsted, you'll probably be away for that as well, 22nd of March. But there's, talking about this Saturday at Beaconsfield, though, you could come for the second half. You don't have to get there at 3. You could come for the second half or something.
And there's another one on the 28th. I can make that because I won't have work. That definitely will be there on that one.
Is that a home game, though? Is that a home game, Bedford? Or?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
That's all right. I can make that. I've got nothing else to do. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, actually, Chris, I'm going to Beaconsfield on Saturday to watch the match with Johnny.
So oh, cool. Cool. We've got, school holidays around, I mean. Kick off on Friday, yeah, so I mean, I'll probably be in the depths of family stuff. I actually went to one of the women's matches, not last weekend, but the weekend before, because I wanted to go and see, you know, Hashtag United. Have you come across them? So they're a new football club, a bit like what Peter's done, but it's a sort of social media club. So they don't have their own home ground, hence Hashtag United. So it's started by a guy called Spencer, and Spencer's got his own podcast. So Peter and Spencer have got sort of very, well, kind of similar paths. So Spencer's a keen football fan, always wanted his own club, a bit like Peter, set up Hashtag United along with some friends. So they've got similar journeys, if you like, with slightly different angles. So yeah, I wanted to go along and watch that match. So the women's matches are good.
How do they play games if they don't have a physical location? How does that
work? So they have to essentially hire or do a ground share with another club. Yeah, they don't have their own home.
And where's that club physically located?
Essex, just off the M25, right. On the inside of Essex. Okay. I forget where exactly, but yeah, just on the inside of the M25. Okay. But yeah, the women's games are good because, I mean, the men's games are quite small in attendance, but the women's games are even smaller, so you feel even more part of it. It's really interesting. So, so I was chatting to... So you get to chat to everyone at the women's games. I saw Peter, had a chat with his son, Connor, again, because I just put an order in for a couple of things. And I said, where's my stuff, Connor? It hasn't been delivered. Gave me some reasons. And the photographer, Kurt, he's a lovely chap. So Kurt's hilarious because he does photographs for Real Bedford and Premier League clubs. There's no in between. He loves. Really? You know, yeah. So it's an even more intimate feeling when you go to the women's games because there's even less people there. So yeah, if you want to go along to the women's games, I'd advocate for that because it feels like you're even more grassroots when you go along to those matches.
Sounds really cool.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I was hoping to go along to the one the weekend just gone because they had that meetup, didn't they? That was planned, but the storms or the rain cancelled it. Yeah. I'm not sure when I'll make the next one, but we shall see. I've got my Bedford cap there. Yeah, it's a bit of a schlep as well.
Lovely stuff.
And also the women's games are on Sundays, which are better sort of traffic-wise, I find. On a Saturday afternoon, normally everyone is sort of trying to get to football. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, are you working today, Harley?
Definitely go to the No, Tuesday, the pub is shut. I'm not up there today. I'm up there tomorrow and for the rest of the week. That's right. Last weekend, I think I've got to do before I'm done. Forever.
Excellent.
I'm off. Can't wait.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy your travels. Enjoy it.
I will.
Yeah. So in Costa Rica, by the way, is Bitcoin Jungle? Is the sort of community in Costa Rica Jungle?
I'm leaving just before the Costa Rica conference, which is really annoying.
Oh, okay.
They've got a Bitcoin conference in Costa Rica, I think, February 10th-ish, mid-February, just before. And yeah, I really wanted to stay, but I didn't choose to get refunds on my tickets, because obviously it's cheaper without, but I can't really extend it without losing a lot of money, which I do not have. And if I did, it would be in Bitcoin. So.
But there's still a big community out there, so I'm sure you'll be able to meet up with some of them.
Are you meaning to say you didn't build your itinerary around Bitcoin conferences, Harley?
I know, awful from me.
schoolboy error, Harley. Traveling the world, but you didn't build your itinerary around the Bitcoin conferences.
yeah, next time. Lesson learned. Oh, next time.
But yeah, take your recording stuff with you.
It's really great to meet you, Harley.
Take your recording stuff with you and yeah, carry on with the podcast and do some Joe Nakamoto style stuff. And,
yeah.
Get surfing out there as well, like he does.
Yeah.
He's a surfer, isn't he?
Yeah,
Cool. Yeah, well, I had a really,
It's really great to meet you. And when you get back, and you start thinking about what you're going to do, you know, maybe in the Bitcoin site, you get back in touch, and we'll, you know, I mean, maybe you'll be a fucking global podcaster by then, and you won't want to talk to us anymore. but if you do, then by all means, get in touch, and we'll help you in
Thank
that.
Thank you very much.
You know, That's in really that cool. whole process, yeah. yeah.
Thank you.
Putting you in touch with potential speakers and, you know, doing whatever we can to kind of basically get you some traction so that it's a success and it's not just you, you know, because a lot of these societies, they can end up a little bit like not really, they're just, students just pitch up and have a few drinks and that's it. But actually, if you want to do something like this, you can make it really good because there's so much meat on this bone, right?
Yes.
But if you can bring that into the place, it will be like one of the best societies in the university in terms of its footprint. Not to mention the positive impact that it could have on your entire peer group, and dare say the university itself. Ultimately, who knows?
I'd love that. That would be awesome. Touch. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yes,
it's pretty good.
Just going back to the society, exactly. I completely agree with James. I mean, if you look at the facilities, the use of the facilities, you'll have, if you get some decent speakers in, I mean, the theatres that you'll have available, I mean, this could be a bit of a money maker potentially for the university, could be a pitch, because you could ticket the event, free tickets for students, and, you know, those who aren't students pay, you know, £5.
Pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah, pay in Bitcoin to... You know, come and watch a speaker, and also you'll have access to travel as well. So you can take your Bitcoin Society to, let's say, Bedford Games as well. You know, take one of the university minibuses. Absolutely. You know, you're perfectly entitled to do that. You know, go visit some other meetups. It could be really good fun.
Yeah, it will be. Got to do that first. University Bitcoin Society in England.
Great chatting, Harley. Yeah. Apologies for the
till then.
Crappy bandwidth, but hopefully speak to you when you get back.
It's all right, perfect. Yeah, thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
And if you do make it to Beaconsfield on Saturday, even if it's the second half, just come and have a look for us. But
cool, perfect. Yeah, right. Thank you very much. Cool. I'll keep in touch. Cheers. Thank you.
Take care, Harley. Bye.
Have a nice day. Bye bye.